Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. It's the 26th today of August, and I meant to do this yesterday on a Tuesday. And I'm sorry to say I forgot. Not yet quite fully operational with the old new dude. And also, I'm sitting in the van, hitched up to my laptop, which is hitched up to a power oak, in order to provide power for the microphone, so that I can record today's episode. I'm still using the Zoom, but I forgot to buy some batteries for it. The rechargeables that I've got are pretty useless now. I've had them for years, so it's not surprising that they've eventually, they sort of just run out of juice. So I need to buy some more rechargeables. But again, it's one of those jobs that goes out of your mind, you know, and you happen to be in a shop and they're probably hanging in front of you and you don't see them because your mind's on something else. You've come in for something completely different. Anyway, that's where I am. But I'm able to just about squeeze enough power out the power rope into the laptop, and then this is using, as I say, my power oak, which later on I will put the solar panel array. It's a portable thing, we've had it for some time now, years, into the sunshine and recharge up the power oak. And when we're on the land, that's the only way to get any electricity. I will have to think of better means or larger panels or invest in things. Sorry, I took my glasses off just then. A bird just flew over to the bird table. And I think it was a magpie, judging by the colours. I'm not sitting in a great place, actually, for we have hornets on the land. And I've just seen one whiz past. And that has reminded me, they are attracted to the LED lights. Hang on, I'm going to close the van door, which is not what I wanted to do, because I wanted to be able to see the landscape outside. But I know they're attracted to the LED lights, and I'll explain that in a minute. Let me just close these doors. The van is still a work van, and so in and around me I have a generator, I have a strimmer, I have numerous long-handled tools like pitchforks, I've got a box of my books, Biggleswick, The Town That Wouldn't Comply, which has about 8 copies left, if that. In it I have a bag of, I can't actually see what's in that bag, I think they're envelopes, padded envelopes, so that when we're here I can get books posted. There is a battery that came out of the tractor, which is knackered, and I need to find somewhere to dump that, really. I'm going to give it a overnight trickle charge, and it might be all right as an emergency battery, but it doesn't seem to hold its charge. I need to get an AVO, a voltmeter, and see if it will hold its charge. My camera and tripod are in here. The chainsaw, a scythe, an old, my petrol canister for the generator is in here. And I use something called Aspin. Oh, I wish I'd had a hanky with me now. So I'm going to be sniffing for a minute. Something called Aspin, which is a mixture of a kind of petrol and oil for the strimmer. It probably works out, by the time you've paid for everything else, it's probably about the same price as doing the mix, but you don't have to bother with the mix. It is a bit of one of these sort of things that is probably just a little bit more expensive, but it's convenient to have it all done. And it's a new strimmer, and I don't want to bugger it up. But anyway, probably be fine if I used petrol and the appropriate oil and measured it out and everything. And it may be a few quid cheaper, but at the moment I haven't used it a great deal, as you can imagine, because the drought and the heat wave has prevented things from growing. Although I do, it's amazing what does grow in the drought. I can tell you, thistles seem to grow. Brambles seem to thrive, and grass not so much. Stinky nettles, they've got deep roots. Excuse me, yawning. They've got deep roots, so they do come up. So that's interesting what doesn't. And as I spoke to somebody the other day, and I said, it's funny, isn't it? We live on a planet where what we have in abundance is not what we can eat. And what we want to eat is very tender and special and needs a lot of effort and hardship to get to grow. And he said, well, it's almost like we're on the wrong planet. And I said, yes, I suppose there is that theory. That's what some people say, that we've evolved from on a different planet and we've been placed here. And when you see animals that are indigenous to the planet, they eat the stuff. They don't have to go and prepare anything. They don't have to plough the fields. They don't have to grow anything. They eat what was available. And I suppose if you go back in time, if we believe what we've been told, which I suppose there's no reason not to believe it. Archaeological evidence is there to a degree. But these days I'm very skeptical about what is out there. But if we do believe what we've been told, man was a hunter-gatherer, and so that's what he did. He would hunt and he would gather according to the seasons. And so I guess that answers that question. But then we got into farming and we got a bit particular about what we ate, I suppose. So We'll stick with that. It does fit the puzzle. Anyway, I didn't want to get into any of that that stuff. It's been hard up here. We've had to be up here a lot because of the drought, because we've got stuff growing. And if you've seen the English couple, you'll know that we've got a whole assortment of bits and pieces. And the thing is, we put the polytunnel up. I mean, the polytunnel up went in June, not expecting it to be as hot as it was, or as droughtful as it has been. And of course, things like the tomatoes, which could have been moved out, and some of them are out, but a lot of them were strung up to help them, you know, there to stop them from bending over. So they were actually strung to the cross beams, which has been a benefit actually to us in the homemade polytunnel, so that they stand to attention, and then they can grow as high as they want and produce the fruit. But that meant that they were, by the time Julia had got round to doing them all, and there was quite a lot of them, we couldn't just unstring them very easily and then put them outside and then have nothing to string them on. They just flop over onto the ground. So we have got some in the ground, and we've made contrivances to keep them upright, excuse me, to some sticks and things, poles and what have you. So we've just had to be here, and it wasn't really the intention to be here rapidly racing here as frequently, costing an absolute fortune. And of course the diesel price has gone up and down, and I think it's up again at the moment, not quite up to £2 a bloody litre, which is, it's just obscene, isn't it? It's just obscene. Why is that? Sorry, I shouldn't be looking at my laptop. My laptop's only there to function, to provide the USB power from my laptop. It's just my mouse in the cursor in a funny place, creating a funny illusion on the screen. My screensaver is a picture of my tractor, so it made me think the tractor. There was something wrong that I hadn't spotted on with the tractor, but it's just the way the cursor was displaying itself. We built again. If you've seen the English couple, I mean, so much of what we do is in there. We've got this seed station, which is pretty much ready. I made a lattice. I was trying to make it where it was woven with willow, but to do that, of course, you need to be able to split the willow down the middle. Now, I'm not skilled at that yet, and so that's a little job to learn, or a little craft to learn, how to split the willow so that you have two halves of that willow, and then it would be flexible. But trying to do it with a solid piece of willow, which is anywhere between half an inch and an inch, and then weaving it, say, between, I don't know, six or seven cross struts the other way, so that you get a lattice, became extremely, well, it wasn't going to happen. But if one knew the secret, and I must go and watch a video on it, I suppose. But anyway, I wanted to get this done. There's so many things I want to get done. I mean, I've got to make a little shelter now for the logs. The big branch that fell down, massive branch, I should say, from the oak tree, one of the oak trees, has now been dragged from the oak tree, chopped the other smaller branches from that, and is lying in state at the moment, and many of the other branches have been chopped up, so it is quite dry, but it'll still be another season before that's ready. It won't be this year, it'll be next year before that's ready to burn, or the bits that we want to burn. But the main trunk of that branch, which is a veritable tree in its own right in many ways, the thickness of that branch is just incredible, and the weight the tree was supporting it's mind-blowing, really. Out of that wood there could be, if we don't leave it to rot, some planks or a bench, probably. And if we are stupid enough to leave it too long, then it'll end up as firewood. But it's quite a thick bit. But how you manoeuvre that, I don't know, because you wouldn't be able to pick it up. So that's, these things happen, and then it taxes you. It's a funny old game, really. It's a funny old game, this looking after a piece of land. It's been absolutely wonderful, though, the outdoor life. So one of my now problems is I've been working on my pipe book, pipe smoker's book, which I know is not going to be of universal interest to most of my viewers, other than those perhaps on the Pipe Channel. But I wanted to get that done because I thought that there might be within the, I think there's something like 13,000 subscribers to the Vobe show, of which probably 3,000 or 4,000 were people interested in the pipe smoking channel part of it. And I know that sounds bizarre, but you've got to sort of, I suppose, write for a market that you think you can sell a book to. And I think the pipe smoking community would be interested in a book, because there's so few books, there's very little written material available now, new material. There's plenty of these sort of older books. But I'm sure that when I was in my 30s, in the 1990s, and dabbling for a couple of years with pipe smoking, I am absolutely convinced there were pipe or tobacco-related magazines. Not trade magazines, but a bit like the old Movie Maker and Cine Film, what was it called? Filmmaker, that I used to get in the 70s. I'm sure that there was a Pipe magazine, because I seem to remember in the back of the magazine adverts for, I think it was St. Peter's in Jersey, if that's the right place, the port of St. Peter's or St. somewhere like that. And you could send off for, I guess it was duty-free tobacco, and pipes, certain pipes. And I think I sent off for a pipe called the Magic Inch, which is a company that did a certain variation with a pipe to try and make it a cooler smoke. And I found that pipe fairly recently, and I discovered that the company still exists. And I wrote to them to ask them if they could supply me with... they had these sort of paper sleeves which went inside the stem. Anyway, they said they still did them, but they didn't ship them from America, where they were. Whereas I suppose this duty-free shop back in the 90s, when we were in the EU, of course, in Jersey. It was either Jersey or Guernsey, I suppose. But anyway, whichever one it was, they supplied all this sort of stuff. So there must have been a pipe magazine, because I do remember reading these sort of adverts. But it's a long time ago. And of course, you know, you can imagine, it's a bit like anybody else's interest in anything, you know, old tractors, classic cars, that sort of thing. You know, it becomes, when you're looking at the glossy photos of pipes, it becomes your pipe porn, as it were, just like food magazines become food porn. You're peering over at these wonderful items, drooling and thinking, oh, I wish I had that pipe or that bowl of tobacco or that pipe stand or all the accoutrements, and then people writing their bits and pieces. So there isn't any of that now. Not at least not readily available. I know somebody has got, I think he's doing a magazine in America that's something like every 3 months, which isn't the same kind of thing. Anyway, so I thought I'd better write a book. And so hopefully I can sell that. Now, so the problem I now have, I've been using a typewriter because that's been absolutely fantastic. And I know that my friend Nigel's got one, which he wants to give me, and we must, now that the van is back on the road, because it wasn't for a while, because of the, well, it did work in limp mode, but I didn't want to go more than an hour on roads that I was familiar with in case the van conked out. But I've actually now cancelled my membership to the AA. It runs out in September. Because what started off as about £100 a year, I think it was like £65 a year when I first got into them, with Relay and, you know, all of that. They don't Relay now in the same way, apparently. A friend of mine was telling me that the AA now Relay from one bloke, sort of one area to another area to another area. It's like a chain, and somebody else takes over. And I don't know whether it's because drivers don't want to do the whole distance. If you happen to be in John O'Groats and you live in Land's End, the driver's not going to take you all the way. But this friend of mine came from, he was in Dorset or somewhere, and he was coming into Hampshire, and he had, I think he said, three different towing drivers, or three different, you know, he was relayed back with, and one, he had to wait something like 3 or 4 hours for the driver. So they took him to one place, then he had to wait for the drive. It's not a smooth thing. And I looked at how much it is, and it was £300 and something a year. And then I thought, how many times have I called out the AA in the 7 years that I've had the van? And once. Yeah. That's a lot of money, isn't it? Admittedly, the day you do conk out and the day you need them to come, but once. And that was to change a wheel. I'd only had the van a few months. I also had a smashed windscreen. Anyway, I was getting onto that. I can't remember where I was going initially. Oh, yes, my friend Nigel got a typewriter. So I've got to go and get over to where he lives, in the county that he lives, and pick that up. I think he said he's got a bicycle as well, which would be very useful. And we just, well, we could do some rain, really, because when it rains, we needn't be here. And so that's got to be done. Oh, and the other problem that I have is I need to, I've this pipe book, I want to get back to that. That's what I was trying to say. Sorry, I'm rambling all over the place, as is my wont. The pipe book, I have been using the typewriter. Yes, hence Nigel, his typewriter. Very generous offer, very kind. Thank you very much. Looking forward to using that. I've got some way with the book. I think I've got enough on this book, although I'm eager to get cracking on the first draft of another book now. But I want to get this one transposed. So it transposed from paper, typed out, onto the laptop. And I don't have, as I sort of hinted at the beginning, I only have when we're here. And we're coming here at the moment very frequently, but I want to get this thing done fairly quickly in downtime when we're here. And it means charging up the laptop. And so I've got to try and find a different power source, because I need to type up all the typewriter-typed paper, you know, the analogue, onto the laptop, so I can give it draft number two, but at the same time edit with it, because when I've read back what I have done on the typewritten page, you automatically start to see, yes, improvements, and I could phrase that differently, I could do this and do that, and you've either got to write in it on pen, which I do, or you wait till you're typing it back up for real, as it were. So how long have we done? 22 minutes. So that's the only real place to do this is in my van with the old table in there. Now, I'd taken out of my van the bed in here because it became cumbersome, and I would have my, you know, these long tools, because you don't want to leave too much valuable stuff on the land. That's the other thing, of course, because things have a habit of disappearing. I'm not leaving my generator and strimmer and things like that, you know, and just some of the pitchforks and things. They're just useful, and the scythe, you know, the sort of things that people might, if they came up on the land, they might nick. So they stay in the van. But what I thought I might now do, seeing as I need to use the van as an office to type up my book, is put the modules, there are two modules, basically two boxes, which ordinarily made up the a single bed, and then there were extra supports and a longer piece of flat wood to make up the double bed when we needed it. But I may put the two boxes back in, but cut them so that there are holes all the way through, and then through the whole length of the two boxes, I could feed the tools in. That would actually make them out of sight in the van, not because I'm so much worried about them being out of sight, but it would keep them all together. And that could be quite... That would mean it would be quite useful, because that again then becomes a seat at the top. And when it's a seat, I can sit at the table. I'm sitting on a rickety chair at the moment, which is not a problem, but it would be nice to have the extra space around me to lay out other things, you know, dictionary, thesaurus, the papers, corrections, pens, you know, and all of those sort of things. So that It is a bit more like an office. So my light has now just gone out in the van, which is interesting because that tells me, it doesn't tell me anything because I can't actually see the thing, but it must be about 25 minutes that the lights stay on in the van. I wasn't quite sure. They have an automatic, you know, the sort of natural LED lights. Now, if I was able to open the door without setting them off, I would be able to see what the weather's doing. Let me just see if I can do that. I'm trying. Fully closed them, so it's going to be, we were told we were going to get rain today. It is bluish with some cloud. Now I've got light again, I can see 26 minutes. So I reckon that's 20 minutes because probably I was fiddling and farting, getting the laptop on and all the rest of it. 20 minutes with the LED lights. I was going to tell you about the LED lights before I go. We have hornets here, and we came up from having bought some stuff. I can't remember where we came from, back onto the land. It was dark, because it's now beginning to get dark early, and we wanted to put some things out of the van, or take things out of the van. And we opened up the sliding door, as you do, and the LED lights came on. And I hadn't realised that where we parked next to a willow tree were the hornets. Basically, that's their nest in there. We'd seen them fluttering about, but didn't realise that was how many were in there. We thought it was just the sap they were after. It being so dry, you know, looking for moisture and things. And within, well, less than 30 seconds, because it was dark, the hornets had flown straight into the van and were bashing their heads against the LED lights. And we subsequently learned, I mean, there was eight of them. And it was a right nightmare because we wanted to get some of these things that we'd brought up out. And we didn't want to get stung. I got stung by a hornet the other day in the wonky workshop. I was lifting a box, cardboard box with a few items in it, out of the way so I could access something else, and I hadn't realised that under the flap was a hornet. And as I'd put my fingers under the flap of this cardboard box and semi-squashed it, it stung me. And I didn't know it was a hornet at first because it fell, as a result of that, into a plant pot, small plant pot. But by that time I'd already rushed out of there in pain, looking for some, I always forget the name of this, the brown stuff, Ingalls, iodine, which really helps with stings. I couldn't find it. Julia wasn't here at the time, so I think she had it in her bag, because she does get stung by wasps quite regularly. And it's great, as I say, as a sting remover. Anyway, so I was in quite a bit of pain initially. It felt like someone had just stuck a skewer into my finger. Anyway, later on, I went back and I could hear this buzzing, and it was in the plant pot, and out came this hornet walking. His wings were damaged and his back end were hanging off, and so obviously that was it. And been stung by hornet. But they are attracted to LED lights. It's the, I think, the blue spectrum that drives them bonkers. I mean, and they were just headbutting in the van, and there were like eight of them in the van. They were just flying at them, headbutting them, and you could tell that they were getting very insensible. And so the sensible thing to do was to avoid it. So basically we had to wait 20 minutes for the van lights to turn themselves off, then the Hornets left, and then we could access in the dark the things we wanted to leave here. So it was a bit daft, but there we are, we learnt a lesson. Anyway, there we go. I think I'll leave it there. Thank you so much for listening. And that's my weekly check-in with you. And I've got to try and sort out a better power source, really. But the good thing about this is it is charging up the laptop, 80% on the laptop from the power oak. And if the sun comes out, I can charge that up again. Anyway, all the best and thanks for listening. Till next time, goodbye.